You are listening to Covenant Eyes Radio, helping you in your journey to stay pure online. Today we are playing part two of our conversation with Melissa Haas. While Melissa and her husband Troy served on the mission field in Africa, Troy committed adultery, and when the truth came forward, this brought the reality of Troy's sexual addiction into the light. Since the restoration of their marriage, Melissa has personally helped many women work through the pain of their husband's sexual addictions. She is also the author of The Life Guide for Spouses, a workbook for spouses of sexual addicts. Today, she talks about what readers will find in this book.
A spouse's journey is much more complicated in that there is grieving involved and some trauma that has to be resolved. For a woman who has been betrayed and just found out her world is shattered, there must be space for grieving. I really think that recovery for a spouse is really God saying, I want to take you to a deeper level of knowing me. Will you let me? Will you bend your knee to this process in the midst of your pain?
Moving forward, we walk with your commands to see the strength that we will have.
Just so people know, what does LIFE, the acronym LIFE, stand for?
LIFE stands for Living in Freedom Every Day. And Jonna and Bob Hale kind of administrate that ministry. It's their brainchild and their vision and their passion. And their passion is to be able to help lay people across the United States be able to find support for addiction and for spouses, especially in areas, remote areas, where there are not therapists and there aren't groups. And so that's kind of their vision for LIFE, to promote that nationally.
Okay, and what is this? This workbook is for spouses of sexual addicts, and just in describing the book, it says that it is introducing a new way of looking at recovery and transformation in our lives. What is that new way? What is the lifeblood of this book? What message does it bring to spouses?
I think in traditional secular and clinical treatment of sexual addiction for spouses. And spouses are sometimes just labeled as co-addicts who need to take their own journey. And and while there are pieces of that are very true, we all have a journey to take, I think a spouse's journey is much more complicated in that there is grieving involved and some trauma that has to be resolved. So in the Spouse's Guide, built into that is a section, before we jump into our recovery work and begin looking at our stuff, there is a section that allows spouses to have room to breathe and grieve. And I think that is very crucial. I know in my own recovery, and also as I have facilitated groups for the past 8 years and worked with other spouses, your heart can only do one thing at once. And so for a woman who has been betrayed and just found out her world is shattered, there must be space for grieving. And if you push or propel or try to propel a spouse to begin working and the things that she brought into the marriage too soon, then she is completely discouraged and often very angry, since she is the one who's been wounded. So you lose a heart, and which is very sad. If you can help a spouse hang in there and grieve with you and walk her gently through that process, then, and the Father will work in her heart, then openness to look at whatever he might want to do through this pain. I really think that recovery for a spouse is really God saying, I want to take you to a deeper level of knowing me. Will you let me? Will you bend your knee to this process in the midst of your pain? So that's what the new way of looking at it is, if there is any. It is to allow a spouse time to grieve and then gently guide her through a process of beginning to look at her own life, the unhealthy and unproductive and ineffective habits she may have in relating to her husband.
Once you get past the grieving, what are some of those issues that typically come to the surface when you're in these groups with other women and you're fleshing out some of those
difficult things that some of those patterns or beliefs that have been going on in a woman's life that lead to the kind of problems that brought them there to begin with. What are some of those issues?
I think probably the biggest issue that always comes up at the very beginning is the issue of control. For spouses who are in relationship with an addict, very often you see one of two extremes, and the more unhealthy the relationship is, the more extreme this is. In the Life Guide, I call them comply ants and self-rely ants. I also use the term Susie Sunshines and Stormy Sues. And the issue around our greatest fears and our woundedness, usually we develop either a great fear of being unloved or rejected or alone, or we develop this fear of being controlled or being powerless. And those come from our family of origins where either we were unloved or it was unsafe. And so we know what it feels like to be unloved. We don't ever want to go there again. That's death to us. We know what it feels like not to be in control and how hurt we got in that, so we don't ever want to go there again. And so spouses project that into their marriages, and depending on how they learn to relate around those fears, you either choose a course of compliance and niceness and placating, what people would stereotypically look at as the codependent doormat, which me, I am one of those. I'm a card-carrying Susie Sunshine. I was all about not losing love.
Sure.
On the other side of that, which really, actually probably more these days because of our culture and because it's become more socially acceptable for women to get angry and use their voices, are the Stormy Sues who see their fear of being controlled or being powerless and being hurt in that is so severe that you see the micromanaging of husband's recovery. It can look nice and controlled. It can look like I'm making counseling appointments for you and I'm reading and highlighting every section of a book that you need to read. It can look very out of control with rages and physical violence and smashing things, cutting up underwear. I've heard a whole bunch of different stories of what that looked like. So that's the first issue that we deal with, this whole issue of we are powerless to change the desires and choices of our guys. What we do have power over is us, and we don't get a free pass to sin because our guys did. So what does that look like? How do I learn to deal with the fact that I'm powerless without sinning? Either by placating and manipulating in a passive, nice kind of way to get my needs met, or manipulating in a controlling, powerful, angry kind of way to get my needs met. That's not what life is about. And so that's the first issue we address with spouses. It's a hard one because we are very much in bondage very often to our coping strategies of making life work and avoiding what seems like death to us, to quote Larry Crabb. So that's the first issue we would deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move from there. I mean, there's tons of different issues. There's the whole idea of forgiveness, and there's trust to work on. What does that look like? There's accountability. What does it look like to have safe relationships? Most spouses do not have safe relationships where they are known. They may be givers in the relationship, like I was, always giving to others, or they may be super needy and always expecting others to fill up their holes. But very rarely do you find a woman with healthy relationships that's part of the problem. She was attracted to her guy because it was unhealthy. So we work on what does safe relationships look like? Do I have safe people in my life? We begin to look at our failures personally and in the marriage, how we relate to God around that, how we relate to others. And eventually we get to a place where we are looking at our own beliefs about men, women, God, ourselves that we brought into the marriage and how they have shaped the way we relate to our spouses. So what needs to change, what needs to be confronted.
And we get this question a lot, but you mentioned the subject of accountability, for instance. And I've asked this question to a number of people in my interviews with them, and so I'm trying to get a feel for how people advise on this. When you're talking about a couple that's in recovery and husband has been sexually unfaithful in some way, whether that be through adultery, whether they be through abusive pornography or whatever, in the end, accountability structures are usually encouraged for the man to enter into. But there's this question is, what is the nature of his relationship to his wife in the area of accountability? Should I be my husband's accountability partner? Yeah.
Right.
And how would you advise on that?
We always advise no. And women get this, and this is the way I explain it to women. If you struggle with comforting yourself with food, you probably don't want to tell your guy, and he probably doesn't want to hear every time you go to the store and buy a Hershey's bar to comfort yourself. And that piece of it is a struggle that needs to happen with other women where you feel safe. There's no, how can I say this? There is not the pressure of performing in relationship or being perfect in the relationship. So we advise that general accountability, especially as it pertains to lustful thoughts or fantasies or just the whole thing of being tempted. I saw a woman today that was beautiful and I was tempted to lust. If a wife hears that every day, it will throw her back in a tailspin all the time because it hits and it triggers against that core false belief that there's something wrong with her, that she's not enough, that she's not beautiful enough or skinny enough or pretty enough, which just simply isn't true. And so when I talk about accountability to spouses, I talk about it in terms of their own. The men on their own journeys are being accountable to men for their thought lives and the way that they're growing in their relationship with God, asking him to hold those, help them keep those thoughts from becoming into something more. And then I ask women to be accountable for their own behavior. So when I talk about accountability in group, I don't talk about it in terms of what guys are accountable to women, to their spouses. I talk about it in terms of what they need to be accountable to other spouses for their own stuff. Are they medicating with food? Are they revenge shopping? Are they investing their lives in their children and neglecting other relationships? Are they giving themselves a ministry to gain significance and value? So we work on identifying our own stuff that we need to help be held accountable for, and we practice that in our groups. I would say that the other work that we do is boundary work, and this feeds into your question. Obviously, if our guys are struggling and make certain choices, then there is a place for a wife to know what is going on and to be able to respond appropriately, to be prepared to respond appropriately in a healthy way. So I encourage all of our spouses to write boundaries around their husband's sexual behaviors or sexual choices that he may choose to make so that they have a plan in order that they do not respond sinfully. It's not about consequences for their guy. It's not about making him or manipulating him not to sin by increasing a pain level. And, you know, there are natural consequences to our choices. Boundaries for spouses, and what I encourage them to write, is to write choices that they will make should their husband fail in some way so that they do not respond sinfully, whether that is attacking him or raging at him, whether that is running to him and placating and saying it's all going to be okay. Both of those are sinful choices if the motive is to stay secure or to stay in control. And so I wrote boundaries around Troy's sexual behaviors to let him know, if you choose this, I'm going to feel this way, and my choice to protect my heart so that I don't sin is this. Now, my choice may impact you just like yours has impacted me, but my motive is to stay in control of what I have power over, which is me. Does that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely, yes. We have, at Covenant Eyes, we have this accountability software. When we recently ran a survey with a lot of our members, and we found out that about 30% of the guys who use the software have a report sent to their wife. And so really the question for us became, okay, assuming that a husband sends an internet accountability report to his wife, that doesn't necessarily tell us anything about the dynamic of their relationship. It all depends on what's the conversation that takes place around that information.
Absolutely.
Why is that information important to her?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's right on. I know Troy uses Covenant Eyes, and I am one of the people that he shares his report with. He has many, many men. At this point in our recovery, it's really just a matter of him saying, my life is wide open for you. I love you. You have access to everything that I do. And
because
we are past the fear-based, and even my own the scars are healed for us. It just becomes a matter of him saying, my life is yours and yours is mine. And so I think you're right on. I think the whole piece of accountability, as couples grow, it can become more of just a topic of intimacy and how can we help each other. But especially at the first, all of this needs to be given into the hands of faithful men who help our guys.
You have been listening to the second part of our interview with Melissa Haas. To learn more about the Life Guide for Spouses, visit freedomeveryday.org. To hear more episodes of Covenant Dies Radio, visit us on iTunes or the Covenant Dies blog, Breaking Free, at covenantdies.com/blog.